It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, May the 31st, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Come join me at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. Leave a five-star review. You know this is your favorite show. And, of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Big show tonight, doing things a little bit differently. Honoring, and we're going to go into the alumni portion of the program today. We're going to be talking a lot about Bobby Valentine later on, as well as Lee Mazzilli, Andrew Moscato, who is a producer and actually quite a successful one, introduced me to the Zen of Bobby V many, many years ago when he was a film student at NYU. Since then, he's done a ton of projects. You'll hear about them in a little bit. But Andrew knows Bobby very intimately. I thought it'd be great to get a sense of who Bobby Valentine really is. You've heard the stories, you've relived the late 90s, but who is really Bobby Valentine? And Andrew and his partners on that film many years ago and since have opened up a media company with Bobby, really have seen Bobby up close, personal, and have a good feel of what makes Bobby a unique individual. I think everybody who watched him speak to the media over the weekend sees how unique, especially if you didn't grow up watching Bobby as a manager, how unique and how different the managerial role is now and the interaction the manager has with the media. Also, a little bit of a conversation, Lee Mazzilli, extended mailbag later. I'm going to try this again. I know I tried it earlier in the year, bringing in a guest to help me with the mailbag. I know some of you didn't like it, and some of you said I didn't answer the questions enough. Well, I promise I'm going to answer the questions, but I'm a little lonely, I guess, today, so I want to bring in my good friend, the OG of Mets bloggers. I had him on a few years ago, Steve Keen. He used to have the Crane Pool Society. He's since retired from Mets blogging, but a huge Mets fan. Always a good friend of the show, good friend of mine. I used to host a sports media podcast during my ESPN days, an offshoot show when I was on ESPN radio out here on Long Island. And we used to just talk about a bunch of stuff. We used to talk about media. We used to talk about life. We used to talk about sports, baseball, NBA. You know, kind of miss doing something like that. You have to do that with a partner where you just sit down once a week and you just riff about what's going on in the world of sports, not just baseball. So miss it. Not that we're going to do that. I will, and I know that already I've gotten a couple of emails about what do I think about the Knicks in the finals. I know this isn't an NBA show, and there's plenty of Knicks content, and you don't need to come here for that. I'll also give you some of my ideas on the Knicks, thoughts on the Knicks, do a prediction, and then we'll get to the mailbag. There's actually some from the chat, some from the Spotify, a comment or two on X, so we'll get to that. And we'll have some fun. It's going to be a long show, a little longer than normal, so hopefully you guys enjoy it. And I know it's been a rough, and we're finally heading into June starting tomorrow. And I got to tell you, even though the season usually, like I say, goes by quick, and opening day seems like it was yesterday, and I heard Howie Rose and Keith Ratt. I listened to the game on the radio today, believe it or not. I had some commitments, and I had to be at the radio. I couldn't watch the ball game. I've seen some of the highlights. But to me, I think it was Keith that said that it was a long month of May. And I think when you think about April and the 12-game losing streak and the drama and the early season frustrations, it was a long April. And this is the first time I think I remember the season kind of dragging this early. Usually you wake up in a blink of an eye, it's mid-June, July, and you're staring down the barrel of the trade deadline. Now, maybe part of that is that the town has been kind of encapsulated by the Knicks and their playoff run and has given us a bit of a distraction. You had some of the buzz from the Subway Series a couple of weeks ago at Citi Field. Maybe it's been the Mets' struggles and all that's been going on there, but there just seems to be a different pace to this season, and we'll see. Maybe it'll pick up now that we're not yet seeing summer weather. It's been weird weather-wise, but you should start to see the summer in baseball. And look, the Knicks situation is going to be decided within the next couple of weeks, so the NBA is going to be in the back burner. Baseball is going to be front and center. Yeah, NFL training camps are not that far off, but baseball is going to be front and center. So the Mets could hide a little bit more, and they actually had quite a good month of May, so maybe they don't need to hide. The Mets could hide a little bit behind the Knicks for the next couple of weeks. I think the general media outside of the beat and outside of the Shermans and the Haymans who are paid to cover baseball will be only the ones focusing in on it and what have you. So there's that. But, you know, I'll start off real quick with, before I get to the team, you know, congratulations to Lee Mazzilli. Congratulations to Bobby Valentine for being inducted into the Mets Hall of Fame. I know some people feel that the Mets are overdoing it. I think Bobby certainly deserves it. Bobby, to me, is a... I think he's the best manager in Mets history. Maybe you want to say Davey Johnson because he won a championship fair, 1A with Davey. I don't think there's ever any question that there's everybody else is a distant second. When Bobby took over, he was truly a change agent when it came to taking a team that still was kind of reeling from the worst team money could buy, reeling from the end of the 80s, reeling from the loss of their top pitching prospects that just didn't pan out, a farm system that just wasn't up to snuff. And he was able to, over the course of his tenure from really 97 to 2002, he was there when Dallas Green was fired in late 96. His tenure was filled with overachievement, taking a team filled with a few stars, a lot of component players, and trash or treasure types that we would call trash or treasure types today, making major contributions. Almost brought this team to the promised land. If not for the Yankees and the Yankees dynasty, they absolutely would have won a world championship. Easily could have won two in 99 and 2000. And to me, probably shouldn't have been fired in 2002. There was a lot of controversy. His relationship with the media was complicated. His relationship with Steve Phillips, who ironically was at the ballpark yesterday, was complicated. But Bobby Valentine, if you weren't around for it, he was using analytics before it was analytics. He was a guy that did everything. And really, when I think about baseball managers, and I always talk about the NBA and coaches and some of my coaching heroes, you've heard about it, the Rileys, the Parcells, guys like that, that I grew up as a fan, really admiring. But Bobby, as a manager, did everything that I value as a baseball manager. You know, did he manage the media? He was confrontational with them, but he had some dialogue and back and forth. He was a smart guy who didn't suffer fools. He managed the clubhouse. Sometimes he was a little bit too much into the mental Django, I've been told by players who were on that team, and maybe that annoyed them and wore them out, but he did get the most out of them. He was always able to figure out ways to get everybody into the game and everybody, use the entire roster. He didn't always manage up well, but he survived when he was put on the hot seat quite often. And he was good at managing the bullpen, really good. The Mets had some of their best bullpens in their team history while Bobby was there, and he got the most out of the Turk Wendells, the Dennis Cooks, Armando Benitez, you know, handled the transition of John Franco from a closer to a setup guy. So, utmost respect for Bobby, one of my favorite all-time baseball managers, an icon in Japan. I know it didn't work out great when he went back to Boston. That's why I'm excited to talk to Andrew Moscato. As far as Lee Mazzilli, I remember Lee more as a pinch hitter on the championship Mets late in his career, but he was an outstanding player, I think an underrated player in the late 70s on a bad Mets team, made an all-star game, actually had a home run in the all-star game. And when you look at it from an analytics standpoint, Lee got on base, had a speed, power, good defense, local kid. I actually have his Lincoln High School bobblehead here in my studio. So, I always like to put up either a photo or a bobblehead of figures in both the Mets and the Knicks, my two favorite teams, that made an impact. Not everybody. So you'll see up on my wall here, I'll have a picture of Bobby or John Olerud, Rico Bronya, who was the first actual authentic jersey that I got. But Lee Mazzilli, I don't have a photo of, but I have his bobblehead, his Lincoln High School bobblehead. So I got that during COVID when, everybody was home and kind of, you know, trying to figure out what was going on. I was going on eBay trying to find some old memorabilia on a good deal, and I got that. So, starting out a little bit here with Mets history, and we'll get to Andrew Moscato, and then clearly we'll talk a little bit more about it, as well as the current team during the extended mailbag later on. I think you can have a really interesting mailbag. I think you can enjoy it. Now, let's get to 2026. So The Mets are, you know, have a decent May. They're not yet really in the muck of the wild card. I looked at social media, some people getting a little bit excited. Nice crowd here at Citi Field the last couple of days. You know, Mets still under 500. Until they get to 500, you can't take them seriously. It's a shame, you know, with the 12-game losing streak and some of the weird stuff that happened in April, even with, you know, let's not say 12, you know, 4-8 stretch, they'd be probably in a different position. You'd feel different about them. It's going to be hard again. I know they're still a little bit away from getting Lindor. Polanco seems to be on the horizon. Alvarez is healing faster than we could imagine. You're still going to be asking for Vientos and Beatty and Alvarez and the kids that we've been critical of to give you offensive production. Although Benj and Ewing, as they learn and develop, and I know Ewing's kind of going through some of his baptism by fire in the big leagues right now, but they're producing on other ways, getting on base with a walk, playing. And, I mean, Howie Rose hit it on the head. I mean, A.J. Ewing, look at those plays the last couple of days. I mean, anyone who had watched Lenny Dykstra, forget about what Lenny became, the goofiness of what he became as an off-the-field character and some of the character issues he's had throughout his life. Lenny Dykstra was an incredibly good player and probably a player that we didn't appreciate. I know I didn't in real time. Guy who got on base, hit for power, really good defense, good arm, guy that the fans could really identify. And if you could get a top of the order with Benj and Ewing in some way, shape, or form, getting their uniforms dirty, playing good defense in the outfield, adding speed to the lineup, getting on base. I know the power is not there, and generally the power throughout the lineup, with the exception of a Soto and occasionally Bichette, is not there. And I think that's probably the biggest issue with the offense right now. Although today Soto showed you when you get some ducks on the pond and he gets into a favorable count, Soto's as elite can be. But to me, the story this week is not the MJ Melendez walk-off or the sweep of the Marlins or, you know, the Houdini act that Devin Williams did to stave off getting swept by the Reds. But to me, it was the young pitchers. It was Jonah Tong, who is not quite starting but doing some bulk outings and trying to get to the point where I guess they're going to make him a starter. I hope so, unless they think he's going to be more of a bulk reliever or they're trying to revolutionize how pitchers are used. I hope that's not the case. Christian Scott now is starting to move away from his Tommy John. And it's funny because I wanted to talk about this last week, but ironically, I didn't realize he never got a win. I mean, it was one of those things that came up like a week ago, and I was like, when he had that good outing in Miami, and he didn't get the win. Mets didn't score for him. I didn't realize in 2024, the OMG summer, he didn't get a win. I mean, I was at his debut in Tampa, and he didn't win that night, but the Mets typically haven't really scored for him, or he's pitched poorly when he's gotten a lead in other outings. So congratulations that Christian Scott got the win. He actually is looking better than Nolan McClain. Now, Nolan McClain today bended. He didn't break. What it was really impressed me is listening to the game, how he was talking about how in the fourth inning when he was running into trouble, and A.J. Ewing certainly bailed him out with a great play, how he was looking over the dugout. It looked like he was waiting for Mendoza to come and get him and bring Peterson in, and they let him get out of it, and he got out of it. And he got out of it not by trying to blow somebody away, but just getting the out, getting the ground ball, making the pitch. And it sounds like that Justin Willard, after the last couple of bad outings, is trying to at least get McClain back to where he was last summer. And remember, he's going around the league the second time. He's trying to get him back where he's pitching a little bit more to contact. Now, remember with Willard, he talked about this day one when we listened to him on podcast and heard him speak a little bit. He's always about, hey, take your best pitch, take your superpower, and pitch to contact, pitch it in the zone, because if it's the pitch that you think it is, if it's a pitch that can get batters out, then you're going to make the pitch. You're going to make you're going to get your outs. Now, McClain's numbers, ironically, I was looking them up, Baseball Reference, they're really not all that different. Hits per nine a tick up, his WHIP will tick up, his strikeouts are a tick up, his walks are actually down. Today we'll put a little bit of dent in them. Obviously, looking at Baseball Reference before today's, what was it, five walks today and a hits batsman or something like that. The home runs, I think, have been a problem. If you look at it, I'm trying to find it here. Yeah, he's given up already 8 home runs in 60 innings. You know, you look at, let's say, 180 innings, that's about 24 home runs. I mean, it's not Burt Blyleven, but, you know, it's up there. And he's a pitcher that he has so much spin, though. If that pitch hangs in the zone, it goes far. I mean, you know, when you look at his Baseball Savant page, his big thing over the course of his brief career has been a high strikeout percentage, you know, soft contact. But quite honestly, they still tend to, you know, get the ball and play on him or hit him a little bit. He's a guy that at times has been hit a little bit. But the key to him is getting those ground balls, getting that soft contact. And, you know, if he mitigates the walks, he's going to be fine. Now, Christian Scott, on the other hand, to me, he's been the most impressive. And he seems to be moving to the top of the heap here. Now, remember, he was considered the gem of the organization that summer of 2024 while McClain was still trying to figure out, does he want to be a two-way player or not? And because, and we talked about this a lot last year during the pennant race, he was forgotten last year. I forgot about him a lot last year, almost out of sight, out of mind. Here's a guy that is, you know, generating soft contact. They're not hitting the ball hard off of him. He's getting the swing and miss. He looks healthy. He's not going deep, but he's getting through five-plus innings. He's starting to go deeper. I mean, he's largely using his four-seam fastball and a sweeper, but they're working a cutter in there, too. You know, we'll see. I think that you look at Jonah Tong, where they're trying to go a little more east-west with him, west-east, whatever you want to call it, than north-south. I think Tong, and I talked about this over the extra innings, the premium content, he has shown a bit of a fatigue factor, a little bit quicker than you would like for somebody who is supposedly a starter. For the rest of the summer, and I don't know if Wenninger or Thornton will get another shot or if Santucci will get any looks. I think that's going to depend. I know they're going with a bullpen game tomorrow. We'll see where they go. I think, and this ties into how they handle these guys like Tong and the bulk starters and things like that. You want to win games. You want to see what you could do. At this point, loosey-goosey, just try to win games. The competition is going to be a little bit more fierce now in June. They got to play the Braves, the Phillies. They got to go to Philadelphia. They got their last West Coast trip to Seattle, a place they never play well that's on the other end of the earth, and San Diego, who's got an outstanding bullpen, and despite the fact that they've had some issues offensively, have played pretty well. So we're going to see. I think June is going to be an interesting month. Let's see how far these pitchers have come, because to me, you, and I've said it 1,000 times, and I'll say it 1,001. What I'm looking for pretty much the rest of the season is what are the foundational pieces that can be incorporated into this roster, young, positional, homegrown players, those two kids, and the key here is going to be the rotation. Because if they've figured out some homegrown talent in this rotation, and not all of them have to be top of the rotation, Scott so far looks like one. McClain at times has looked like one. Tong, not so much. We don't know enough about Thornton. Wenninger hasn't gotten a start. And Santucci's still in, what, double A. But if they could call three pitchers out of that group, and let's say, you know, one is a top of the rotation, one is a mid-rotation, one is a back in the rotation, that's a really good start. A little disappointing because you'd like to have, like you had for the 2015 team, we had Harvey and Syndergaard, both top of the rotation guys. And it was funny, I was looking at, and then of course Wheeler later on was more of a top of the rotation guy. When I was looking, and we know DeGrom and what he was, so they actually had three top of the rotation guys in that spot. And I think that's clouding some of the judgment of the fans with the young pitchers because they've had, and a lot of the younger fans in particular, we're not talking about fans that grew up watching Doc. We're not looking at fans who grew up watching Seaver and Kuzman. We're talking about fans who probably grew up seeing Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard, Mats, Wheeler, and think that every young pitcher that's supposedly the top pitcher in the organization turns out to be ace. By the way, Steven Matz is a perfect example. It was posted on social media, on Twitter, earlier in the week, and he has very similar numbers to David Peterson. Nobody would consider David Peterson and David Peterson's career to ever be considered a top prospect or top of the rotation pitcher. He's always been a guy that, you know, back of the rotation has had his struggles. Sometimes lefties take longer to develop. But I think the biggest difference between Steven Matz and David Peterson is that their numbers look the same, but Matz had the ability to be a top of the rotation pitcher. He could give you a game like a Harvey, like a DeGrom. He just couldn't do it consistently enough, and he was as likely to have stretches of, you know, back in the rotation, mediocre starts, More so than when those other guys were healthy, particularly Harvey and Syndergaard at that point, where Peterson has not had enough of those top of the rotation moments. But so the point is, Mats was a highly regarded prospect. He was actually the first guy drafted, even before DeGrom, and he had a number of injuries. He was in the Mets organization a long time. He was in the Mets organization probably when he was traded the winter of 2020 into 2021, over a decade when you consider his time out of Stony Brook, out here on Eastern Long Island, what have you. So, you know, sometimes you got to take a step back and look. Not every young pitcher is a linear path to stardom. But I think that Justin Willard probably has the biggest and most important job out of anybody not named David Stearns in that front office in the organization. Because if these kids can be developed into solid big league pitchers or better, it's going to be a huge advantage for the Mets as they try to figure out how they could compete and win over the next few years in the face of a lot of uncertainty. A lot of stuff came out about what the owners really want in terms of salary, payroll structure, some very onerous looking salary cap numbers. I don't believe there'll be a $250 million salary cap, but lo and behold, you knew that the owners were looking to cut cost and have payroll certainty and share revenue. So the Mets' big advantage, which is, and so is for the Dodgers and the Yankees and so on, which is money and the owner's willingness to spend and lose money, could go away, which makes this development, which makes what Stearns did this offseason, moving away from the Alonzo, Nimmo, McNeil core, the old OG or the recent OG positional players, the homegrown positional players, even that much more important. So I think over the next few weeks leading into the deadline, that's really what the whole story is. How do all these players develop? By August 1st, how do we feel about Ewing and Benj? By August 1st, how do we feel about McClain, Scott, and Tong? Does Thornton, Santucci, and Weininger even become on the radar? Do we see Weininger? Or are they just going to go with bullpen games and piece it together? It'll be interesting how that all works out. By this time next year, what a delicious scenario would be if things work out. And I know that the odds of this happening are low when it comes to prospects and prospect development. But what would be great going into opening day 2027? Hopefully, knock on wood. I'm knocking on my studio desk here. Knock on a lot of wood. That McClain, Scott, Tong, and maybe Thornton and Santucci. I don't think all five will be in the rotation, but all five will be on the radar to have significant contributions to that team. You have a veteran like maybe Holmes you bring back in the rotation. I don't know what they would do. I have a feeling they're not going to be as deep into a big-time long-term pitching contract with Skubal, especially with some of the red flags there. And, you know, you got to wonder if Cohen even takes a step back, looking at what's going on with Kyle Tucker, his struggles in L.A., looking at how difficult Bo Bichette has had a transition here. Yes, the Soto contract has worked out. Soto's been elite. Yes, Lindor, after a rough start, has been elite. So not all of them have not worked out. But let's face it, you don't know how pitchers are going to react. They signed Scherzer, shorter-term deal. They got maybe a little more than half a season of vintage Scherzer, a lot of health issues, and a late career veteran with Moxie Scherzer. They didn't get vintage Verlander when they signed Verlander. Again, those were short-term deals. So going out and giving a big-term, long-term contract of 7-plus years potentially to Skubal, that might not be where his head is at. And if you have the young pitching that's percolating and a nice veteran like a Holmes or somebody else that maybe we're not even talking about or thinking about in that rotation, that's a pretty delicious thought process, and that will save the team a ton of payroll space to reinvest what I think right now is the black hole in the organization, which are the positional players. Yeah, Ewing and Benj are exciting. Yeah, Ewing and Benj are promising, especially with the way Benj has played over the last month. But we talked about this last week, and I don't think this is going to change in the near term. We'll see what the draft brings this year. And maybe, depending on how this year goes, they may have a decent draft pick next year. But to me, the pitching and the development of the pitching is so important because I think they're going to have to spend payroll capital and resources on importing more offensive players. They're going to need a big home run bat. With Simeon and how he's in the contract, how he's been aging. Bichette at third, assuming he's back, Lindor at short. First base question mark, to a certain degree catcher question mark. The outfield seems a bit set, but if Soto moves to DH, you might have a spot in another corner out there. The Mets are going to need a couple of bats this offseason, maybe as many as three bats this offseason. And I don't know if they could bring them up, or they're not going to be coming from the system because they got the two bats that are already on the roster. So the development of the pitching is the big story the rest of the year. We're going to be talking a lot about it. Look, if they play well in June, they get closer to 500 or around 500 July 1st, depending how the rest of the muck goes, maybe we could re-engage in the conversation about wild card and playoffs, and we could go back to that non-prediction prediction I made with David Stearns where it was, hey, maybe he's going to have a tough decision at the deadline about whether he wants to give up some prospect capital to go for it this year. But they have to show a lot. June is going to be the determining factor about, and even though I've kind of waved the white flag because I don't think that they have the ability, because by the time that Lindor gets back, even though Polanco's on the horizon, I think that they've buried themselves and there's too many teams. And because you're developing pitch players while you're trying to win, I think you're going to have those bumps in the road like you had when you lost in Miami and got swept and then lost a couple of games to Cincinnati. I think you're going to see more of that. So anytime they get hot, I think you're going to have that kickback because, like you saw today, Nolan McClain is still a work in progress. He's not a finished product. He's learning. He's going through the league a second time. So I think that's where the month of June in my focus is. Have some fun. Enjoy the young players. I know it gets frustrating when they lose. I know it gets frustrating when Devin Williams blows a save. I know it gets frustrating when they don't hit. But, you know, right now, it's really more about, and I know they have the big payroll, and this wasn't the way it's supposed to be, the bridge from Nimmo, Alonso, McNeil to the next generation of Mets was not supposed to be this rough. They thought they had enough to get through that 1 year. They don't. And hopefully, if the prospects develop, it will be no more than 1 year. And I think that that's really the story right now. All right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, Andrew Moscato. He is a producer, filmmaker, met him when he was a young student at NYU, knows Bobby V very well, business partner Bobby V, shadowed him in Japan about 20 years ago. Nobody better to get an idea of who Bobby V really is. Great stories. I can't wait for you to hear this segment. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Learn a little bit about Bobby V and the zen of Bobby V, probably my favorite manager in Mets history. More so for me personally than David Johnson, but I'm biased because, like I've said many, many times, I cut my teeth during the 90s and those late 90s Mets. All right, let's take a quick break. The zen of Bobby V right after this.